You know, there is a saying, a very old saying, when the pupil is ready, the master will appear. Now, if you want to kill this man, I can help you, and I can teach you how to move, how to think, how to take your revenge with honor and live to celebrate it. It will take dedication, it will take time.
Why are you so eager to help me?
Because once, a long time ago, you did the same for me.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Filmwork Podcast. I'm Stephen Hurst. Normally I'm in charge around here, but something strange is going on. Today I have a different guest with me, co-host, should I say, and it's a man who's been on the podcast before. Hello, Mr. Simon Aitken.
Hello, Stephen.
And look, what are you doing to me, man? This is what's going on. We planned, I said to Simon, hey, do you want fancy coming back and doing a one-off film club with me? There's a film I want to talk about. Would you want to do this? And he was like, yeah, sure, definitely. So he came round and, unprepared, has thrown this recording device in front of me. So if I sound like I'm on the toilet, it's his fault. Yeah, no notes, no nothing. We're just going for it, aren't we?
We are indeed.
What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about The Mask of Zorro.
1998.
Yes, yeah, Martin Campbell.
Martin Campbell, director. And he would also direct the sequel, which we will talk about as well, briefly.
Yeah, we'll mention there was a sequel.
We'll mention it.
There was a sequel. It was bad.
And it
just
was
a void.
It was like 7 years later as well, 2005.
Yeah, it was too long for there to be a sequel afterwards.
Yes. More on that later. But yes, The Mask of Zorro, 1998. So, Antonio Banderas took the lead. What had he done at the time? I know he'd 4 years ago was an Interview with the Vampire.
Oh, he'd done Assassins with Sylvester Stallone.
Fucking hell! Oh dear! So, is this like one of his first proper main leading roles then? Hollywood leading role, should I
Hollywood,
say?
Hollywood, yes. He's notable for being the first Spanish actor to play Zorro.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Why, who had played it before? Tyrone Power, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah, and the chap who played Skeletor.
Frank Langella?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
When did he play fucking Zorro?
Back in the 70s.
What, when he played Dracula?
Yeah, back around the same time, yeah.
Oh my god, I got to seek this out and find it. Well, technically speaking, they got it wrong initially because Zorro is actually Anthony Hopkins.
Yes. That's true.
When you think about it, this is about the Mask of Zorro being passed on. It's a baton-handing film, sort of. But I'm guessing from the way the film opens with Anthony Hopkins as Zorro, saving the day, that he is the first and original.
That's correct, yeah.
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 Yes. Did you guys see this at the cinema?
I missed it at the cinema, but it was one of the first DVDs I bought.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I definitely saw this at the cinema when it came out and loved it. I am a big fan of this film. I think it is, oh god, how to describe it? It's like, it's a summer blockbuster and everything about it is perfect, in my opinion. Catherine Zeta-Jones! yeah, alright, a few niggles along the way maybe.
Okay, well let's talk about Catherine Zeta-Jones. She is very tolerable in this film and she only tears up once.
She only tears up once?
Well, you remember...
Is that when she gets her fucking dad, her real dad, killed at the end?
No, no. When she learns that her fake dad is fake.
So it's tears for her fake dad, not for her real one. Who exactly. She gets murdered at the end.
Yes.
Everything came together. I mean, I loved the opening sequence because you get introduced to all the bad guy, well, the main bad guy, yeah. Zorro, the two kids, who we will then see one of them grow up to be Antonio Banderas. Everything is put in its place and you get a little mini adventure. But it also sets the villain plot on the go because he sends all the dons away with property, basically. What always catches me is he goes home to his wife and the baby daughter's there in the cot and then suddenly the bad guys just fucking show up.
Yeah.
How did they fund the...
Right, I watched this again recently and what it is when Zorro lands on the, where Raphael is.
Yes.
It's the way he says Raphael to him, he realises it's Zorro. And also the other thing to prove...
Wait, is this at the beginning when he is
as
Zorro?
Yeah, yeah. But he lands in front of him, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Where he does the
puts the Z on his neck. Right.
But the way he says Raphael, yeah. he realizes who it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And that's the fact, because Zorro was shot in the arm.
Yeah.
That when.
Oh, yeah, well, he confronts him by the arm. Yeah.
And he says, blood never lies.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realise that it was because of the way that he addressed him that he was like, ah, I know you are, Diego de la Vega, whatever it is.
Yes, very good. Yes, it is. See, you're doing well without any notes.
Yeah, I am doing. I'm literally writing my notes as I write them. Like, that's any fucking good to me. The film was made in 1998. Yeah. So, when you think about it, he then puts him in prison for how many years? 20?
20 years, yeah.
20 years. His life, he's lost his wife, he's lost his daughter. There is no happy ending for Anthony Hopkins in the end. It's like, that's it. That is just a sad, bad ending for the original Zorro. And that's fucking depressing when you think about it. I know they wanted it to be a fun, adventurous, you know, hey, with romance and whatever. But I'm like, that's fucking depressing when you look at it from Anthony Hopkins' perspective. He's lost everything right at the start of the film.
Well, that's just good storytelling. Because you want the hero to be, you know, at kind of his lowest point. Usually they save that for the end, but with this, you actually see him come back.
Yeah.
And there's this lovely thing throughout the film where you notice the facial hair gets shorter and shorter. So both Anthony Hopkins and Antonio Banderas have long, wiry beards when you first see them 20 years later, God. And then it just gets shorter and shorter until they have no beards anymore.
I love Banderas' hair at the beginning. It's all that frizzy mess, like he's been electrocuted or something. But he has a bad start. I mean, he's a thief, he's happy with his brother, and this guy, three-fingered Jack. Their little escapade all goes to pot, and his brother gets killed. Although, technically speaking, Captain Love, who the secondary villain in here, the soldier, he doesn't actually kill his brother.
No, his brother shoots himself.
Yeah, his brother commits suicide. He's like, fuck that, I'm not getting caught, and shoots himself in the chest. All right, fine, it's his fault, but...
Yeah, he must have read the script. He knew where he was going to end up, and he's like, fuck that, bang!
Yeah, and Hopkins, you find out, has escaped from his imprisonment. I love when Raphael initially comes back. He goes ashore to find him first.
Yes.
And technically, he does go face-to-face with him, and you see Hopkins just sort of bouncing about on the spot, isn't he? He's like he's lost his mind or something.
That's right.
I thought that was a nice little touch. But yeah, obviously, his initial thing to do is what Antonio Banderas wants to do, is just go straight to the guy and try and kill him. And it's only when his daughter comes ashore that he's like, things are a bit more complicated than I thought.
Well, the way he escapes from prison is really good, because it's very similar to...
Count of Monte Cristo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But quicker.
Yes. Yeah, much quicker. Yeah.
But it was nice, because they had that ticking clock.
He was in prison for more time.
But he has that sort of ticking clock element going on, because the guards are coming back, and he has to get out of his chains and... swap himself with the other prisoner who's been killed.
And it's just by fortune that he runs into Antonio Banderas, who's drunk.
Yes.
And watch that line that kills me every time. That's it, because he's got the pendant that his brother used to wear, that Zorro gave them, and he's trying to get a glass of whiskey for it. He's about to trade up for a glass of whiskey, and that's when Hopkins, the real Zorro, steps in and goes, you know, you shouldn't pawn that off for a mere glass of whiskey. And Barrett Banderas goes, why do you think I should get two? Oh, class.
Yeah. I know Banderas is very good, especially that opening bit. He's kind of fun.
It's good when he gets taken to the lair of the fox where he's going to do his training. And I think the interplay between these two is brilliant.
Yes.
And obviously that's something that's going to be missing from the sequel, because Hopkins ain't in it. That's but it. I thought their interplay was perfect, the way that he starts to train him and then makes him become a gentleman as well. And it's a great moment where straight away he's like, right, come on, let's go, grab a sword. He's like, do you know how to use that thing? And he's like, yeah, pointy end goes into the other man. And when they first go to spar off against each other, he does this wild waving of the sword, doesn't he?
That's right.
And Hopkins just taps him once and the sword flies out of his hand.
Now, I have to say, though, the form of press-ups he has to do...
With the candles.
I don't think that would help somehow.
Well, eventually you're going to get so knackered that you're just going to fall on them.
Yeah.
So he's going to get battle scars before he's even gone into fucking battle.
I could understand it if he was trying to sweat him out of alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, if he is, if he was such a bad alcoholic that they needed to get completely out of his system, then that would be a good way of doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, build up your muscles. No, yeah. I'm sure there's easier ways.
I was trying to pay more attention to the bad guy's plot the last time around I watched it, and it is actually fairly sort of thin, because it's basically a case of he's come back to claim this land and, you know, dig out the gold and then blow up the mine. That's it.
Yeah.
Because it's half the film... establishing everybody, Hopkins and Banderas teaming up, training. He fucks off and has a little mission in town where he gets the horse that he wants. Nice little relationship with the horse as well. It doesn't do what it's fucking told.
And the tornado, yeah.
Yeah, that stunt that when they go, the stunt man,
yeah.
Banderas, my ass, jumps off that roof to land on the horse, and the horse steps forward and he just lands on the ground.
Oof.
Is there a cut in there?
No.
How the fuck was that done? That looked painful. For whoever jumped.
Oh, I'm sure the stunt guys, you know,
yeah,
coordinated.
Figured that out. But yeah, every time I see it,
it did look nasty, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But good stuff. And yeah. Then obviously you get the start of the romance when he meets Elena.
Or as Anthony Hopkins goes, Elena! He's a bit confused about his own daughter's name because everybody calls her Helena and he calls her Elena.
Oh. yeah, she's okay, I guess. She's not annoying or anything like that. She is in the fucking sequel. But in this one, I suppose, serviceable. But literally, every time I'm like, you just got your dad killed, your real dad killed at the end. What the fuck are you doing?
Well, I don't think her relationship would have worked too well with Anthony Ben. You know, with fucking Anthony Hopkins around, you know? It'd be like... always scolding them, and you know, they just think, you know, have a child, no way, you never let them anywhere near each other.
I mean, I suppose it's a testament to, you know, I mean, him as an actor playing the part so well that I was like, oh, don't kill him off. But yeah, you have to, because you can't have two of them there, or him lingering around at home,
that's right,
giving out orders. So it was inevitable. It's just the way they did it, I was like, really? But I suppose he just basically dies of his wound, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
Because he does get to take care of his nemesis, as does Antonio Banderas.
But actually, he takes both of them out, because Antonio Banderas, he stabs Captain Love, but he's still alive.
Good fucking move when he got the sword off him.
Yeah.
Catch, stab.
But he's still on that lift, isn't he?
Oh,
alive.
That's right. Oh, that's...
And the cart of gold.
All the fucking gold. He goes up fucking screaming.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the bad guys quickly then. So Captain Love, I mean, I made the joke recently on your Facebook.
Yes, you did.
That this guy, because the press did it at the time. It was like, don't know who this guy is, but he looks a bit like James Cameron. I've not seen him in anything since.
He's done lots of stuff, but...
TV?
But the thing is, you've not seen him... that same look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that look was specific for that film. He never usually has a beard and long hair.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you go on his IMDb page, see that he has a completely different look.
Yeah.
He's usually shaved with sort of short, dark brown hair.
Yeah.
So.
But I thought, oh, he'll get some roles off of this because I think he stands out.
He's very good.
Fucking pickled heads and jars.
I know. I couldn't still believe this is a PG.
I know. I was having this argument with Ben and Sean about, you know, what should be in a PG, what's not, because we talked about the Mission Impossible series. When we did that, we were like, seriously, Emilio Estevez gets a claw in the face?
Yeah.
And how the fuck is that a PG? And it is. There's no blood.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, how could you chop a guy in half and throw him down a bloody vent shaft in The Phantom Menace and make that a U? Oh, there's no blood in that either.
Well, no, fucking fake as anything.
Yeah, well, yeah, fair enough. But I thought, man, that's harsh. But he's got lots of, not, you know, good moments, because there's some good dialogue between him and Banderas, but there's also some good fighting as well.
Yes.
And he shoots the old guy twice, three-fingered Jack.
Oh, God, yeah, and he laughs to himself. It's like, what's so funny? Every time I've shot him, he's been in the air.
Yeah. I mean, so that scene took me by surprise when the brother's head comes out, and I thought, oh, fuck, he's figured him out. And he has.
He has, yeah.
But... why isn't he doing something then? Because he hasn't got proof?
I think it's because he hasn't got proof.
Right.
And I don't know. I think maybe that's one of the weak points of the story.
Mm.
Because you have a character who's suspicious. Because we are talking about my own podcast.
It's all right, you can plug your podcast, yeah, mate.
Movie Heaven, Movie Hell. We talked about a film called Raw Deal with a similar character who finds out Schwarzenegger's that he's actually working
undercover
for
cop.
Yeah. And he actually does something about it.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the difference between that film and this film, because he doesn't do anything about it, yet he has his suspicions.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very strong suspicions. Because that's risky, because if he, say, for example, the guy that Antonio Banderas is pretending to be, if that was a real person who is not Zorro, then he's in trouble losing his job, pulling out heads and hands.
I doubt it. I mean...
that scene, the sick thing is that at the end, Banderas actually takes a drink of the water from the jar where his brother's head's, and I'm like, oh my God, did he have to go that far to sort of... cover himself up? But you see it in his face when he leaves the room, because he breaks his cane over his knee, doesn't he?
That's right.
Fucking furious.
And also you see him take his little moustache off in the cave afterwards as well.
Yeah. But it's when they confront each other at the end and he's finally stabbed the guy.
Yeah.
And as you said, he's on his knees, they're on this thing. And he whips off his mask. You know, haha, it is me. They definitely knew who each other was at that point anyway.
Yeah.
But the guy reacts like he's only just found out. He's like...
It's one of the things from other Zorro films that they've kept in. Because Zorro always did that at the end. Whenever he was confronting his arch enemy, the mask would always come off.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Ah. Yeah. But those people always die or go to jail?
Oh, die.
I was going to say...
You don't reveal your secret identity to somebody who's about to go to jail.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh,
that would be dumb.
I had no idea. Okay, well, that's a nice touch that they've kept then.
Yeah. There's lots of nods to the old films.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was a big Zorro fan when I was a kid, I've seen them all. Just the sort of acrobatics, the whip.
The horse.
Yeah, the horse, yeah. I mean, the
scene. Whose name is?
Tornado.
Yeah. What's the name of the not Lone Star, the Lone Ranger?
Oh,
Silver.
Yes, it is. Right. Hi-ho, Silver, away.
Yeah.
The name of the Indian? Johnny
Tonto.
Depp.
Yeah, Johnny Depp. Fucking Jack Sparrow. Oh, I watched that recently, and the little, because you know you've got the story of him in the future as an old Indian.
Yeah.
That was just the dullest stuff ever, and that the most annoying kid as well. Off point.
Yeah.
So, and the main villain, Stuart Wilson. You and I have talked about him very briefly in the past. I really like him in this film. I really like him as an actor, and he worked with Campbell before on No Escape.
Yeah.
And obviously was the bad guy in Lethal Weapon 3, so he was getting a lot of bad guy roles.
He was.
And I thought he was terrific.
Don't forget, he was in Hot Fuzz as well.
Was he?
Yeah, he played the Doctor.
Oh. I did not know that. He's in a Tony Scott movie. He plays a senator in... What's the one with Bill Smith?
Enemy of the State.
Yeah, that's right. I think he's uncredited in that. Yeah. And then that climbing movie, Vertical Limit
yes.
is the dad. Yeah. he's fantastic in this. I really like him because it's not just a two-dimensional villain. They've really given him a past and stuff to do. So it is, you know, a blurred line. So, I mean, that's technically why Elena gets her real dad killed at the end, because she stops Hopkins from shooting him.
Yeah.
But then she gets taken prisoner and blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
I think there were some nice parallels in the film. The fact that at the beginning, Hopkins reveals himself to the kids as a monk.
Yes.
And at the end, Banderas is in the monk outfit. And also the fact because Anthony Hopkins' wife gets shot.
Yes.
I think the ending was supposed to sort of be similar to that.
Yeah, well, he's come home and he's talking to the baby in the crib and getting carried away.
No, when Hopkins gets shot.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Hmm. witness the birth of her parents' murders. Lovely. How does that not screw you up?
But yes, the ending was very much like the ending for The Searchers, where he walks away and the door closes.
Yeah. Any other bits, scenes or moments you want to pick up on this one?
Well, I do love the bit where...
The tango dance or whatever it is.
Well, the tango's very good. And it's nice because it's usually... in a Hollywood film, that would just be put in there.
Yeah.
It actually has a point.
It does, yeah.
The point is to stop the Dons from going up to the office.
And to win favour with Stuart Wilson's character.
That's right.
Yeah, and it works. And there's a moment when he thinks, damn, it hasn't worked, and then the guy comes back and goes, hey, why don't you come with us? I want to show you a vision.
That's right, yeah.
And Hopkins is obviously mincing around in the background in his little peasant outfit. No, it's all cool. And I did like the ending. I thought it was, you know, because you got a big explosion as you expect from a big Hollywood film.
Now, I know you're a big fan of the Wilhelm scream, and I know there wasn't any Wilhelm scream in this, but what did you think of the Jaguar scream?
Is that the wow scream?
Now, it's what it is it's at the beginning when there's the fire appears on the screen where they do the Zed.
Yeah.
And the Mask of Zorro comes on, and it's then the main explosion at the end. You hear a sound of a Jaguar in the sound mix.
Yeah, I think I know the one you mean.
Yeah.
I've heard that in... I think that's the one I've also picked up when I was bitching about the Wilhelm scream. The one that you hear Young Guns 2, where a flaming cart almost hits someone and they leap out the way and they make a sound that I described as the beginning of I Feel Good. Wow! Is it that kind of a sound?
It's that kind of sound, yes. Yeah. But they purposely put it into the sound mix.
Yeah.
And throughout the 90s, they were forever putting animal noises into sounds of explosions.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I wondered what your take is.
It doesn't annoy me as much as the Wilhelm, but I have obviously clearly picked up on it on various films here and there. And it's like, just fucking record a new sound, for God's sake.
Look, they use it because they feel it's a good luck charm.
Good luck for what?
That the film will do well.
Alright, but what if someone's like, fuck, that goddamn scream's gone off again, I'm not buying this film.
It's only going to be a few people, Stephen.
Well, alright, fair enough, I'm in the minority again. Right, well, let's not get bogged down with that, because people will get fucking fed up of me bitching about bloody sound design issues. Oh, so they're a superstitious lot, then?
Yes.
All right,
filmmakers are, yes.
Fair enough. Well, no reason to be superstitious on this one, because I think it all works. It was an absolute delight, and it still stands up today.
Oh, it was great to watch it again. First time I watched it in HD as well, and it was just great to see it again.
Awesome. Music, James Horner, sadly passed James Horner. It's pretty good, but he has recycled it in fucking Troy.
Right. Well, yeah, but there's a lot of Spanish influences. There's a lot of Spanish influences in there, though. Yes, they have the horns.
Yeah.
But the majority of it is more like the tango.
Yeah.
So it's not so bad.
Fast forward 5 years, I'm watching Troy, and I'm like, well, where have I fucking heard that little bit before? What's not good, though, is the duet song over the end credits. Fucking, I was like, what is this, a Disney bloody cartoon? Is Robbie Benson,
I thought we'd skip that.
God, it's awful. But remember, it was in his... the year before was Titanic, so he'd obviously had the whole big Celine Dion hit. He thought he'd try and get himself another one. No, we weren't to be having any. I didn't even know what the song was called.
I as soon as they start singing over,
it's got the love in the title, "Fight for Love" or something. Hey,
it was singing over the main theme. It's like one of those songs where they put a theme tune and then somebody's like adding lyrics to it.
Yeah,
it's just fucking awful. But
John Barry did it very well with the Bond films, but
but that was designed to be that way. I didn't think this doesn't feel like it was designed.
Oh, it was designed, but
the other thing I want to say is this, that I actually like Martin Campbell, and he's very good at rebooting stuff, because
Bond twice,
yes, he did GoldenEye and Casino Royale,
yep,
and they're always considered like the best films for those Bonds.
Yeah. I haven't seen Spectre yet, but that he is responsible for both, in my opinion, Craig's and Brosnan's best Bond films so far.
Indeed. Yeah. It was just, unfortunately, he couldn't help the Green Lantern.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that in any depth on the podcast when we were doing all the comic book movies. It went in one of the shitty shows.
Yeah, I didn't even realise he directed it until I was looking at his IMDb page.
Oh, really? Oh, I knew he was doing it. I thought this would be interesting.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate.
Yeah.
It was the curse of Ryan Reynolds.
Well, Deadpool apparently might straighten things out.
Let's hope so.
But we'll see. Okay, then, let's mention the sequel very quickly, then.
There was a sequel. It was shit.
Don't watch it. Same lead, well, main actor and main actress, and Horner's back doing the score. It's literally got all the same key people back doing the same jobs, but it just felt, and literally when I was rewatching it the other day, I was just like, I'm bored already, and I feel like I'm having the life drained out of me. Although all of this stuff is there, it just kind of feels wrong. It's giving me a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, it's a stupid ass story as well.
Oh, well, yeah, and then when the actual story kicks in as well, it's like, what?
And also, you have a very, very annoying kid in it.
Yes, and an annoying kid. It's like the Mummy Returns. Let's give him a son who's 10 years old and gets him mixed up and everything. No! That just makes the bad guys look like idiots, which, you know, the majority of them are. Who's the guy with the scars and the... Nick Chitlin is the actor.
Yeah,
people will see him in Con Air.
I haven't seen him for ages.
Back in the box.
I haven't seen that film in ages, so... All I remember is there's a bit where Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones carve their names on somebody's bum, and it reads Easy.
Oh, right.
And I thought, that's my only memory of it. And
yeah.
That's how I'd like to say.
Rufus Sewell is a French bad guy. Yeah, and it was overlong as well, but yeah, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And as you'd said earlier on, they waited too long. 7 years was way too long to wait.
Yeah.
And they picked the wrong story. You don't... It's like when we were bitching about Ghostbusters 2 on our podcast. We were like, the last thing you want to do is start off on a bum note. Don't take everything away from your hero. That happened in the first one anyway.
Yeah. Well, the problem is when you're doing a sequel to a film that has a definitive end, it's always going to be bad because it wasn't made to have a sequel.
Yeah.
It's, you know, because like with Ghostbusters 2 and this... It ends where they're in a good place.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so to see them all start from the beginning again just seems to be, what? You know, it's...
It's hard work. And yeah. Let's split the couple up and make them have to get back together again. It's like, oh, God.
And of course...
Can't you just have another adventure and keep it that simple?
And the other thing as well is that what made the original films work so well is usually that they're, you know, there's something different about them. And then they just try, and they don't even try to replicate what they did.
Yeah.
They just try and sort of, you know, fit it into like a square peg into a circle hole, you know. And it just doesn't work because that's not how that story and those characters work.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's... And I think also, it may have taken that long to get the film made, but I bet you when it came to it, there was a big rush to do it because all of them... We're working on other stuff.
Yeah, do you think it was a case where it just took that long for them to all be free or something?
Possibly, because they were all busy.
Yeah, but it was no good, and then there wasn't another one.
Yeah.
And we've not really heard much about Zorro since.
Well, it's due to be rebooted, and with Zorro you can always do that. There's always more stories to tell.
Yeah.
So,
maybe not at the moment, because even the Western's sort of like suffering again at the moment. And with things like the Lone Ranger being like, no, we don't want that either.
But Zorro's never been a Western.
No, but people will equate it with that sort of thing, though.
I mean, Zorro is a superhero at the end of the day. I mean, he has his own cave.
The original Batman.
He is, indeed.
Because he's rich. And makes his own shit.
That's right.
Has a Batmobile horse. Interesting. Maybe they'll update it for modern day.
Well, let's hope not.
Let's hope not. Anyway, thank you for bringing this horrendous looking recording device into my home.
You're welcome.
So if we sound really echoey and weird, then it's Simon's fault. But no, to be fair, thank you very much. for coming back. That's for a little guest spot. I'll have you back again at some point. I'll go, hey, let's do this one. But in the meantime, people can listen to Simon's own podcast at...
Movie Heaven, Movie Hell. We're on iTunes, and you can also find me on my website, which is independentrunnings.com. And also, you can check out my films that I make, because I'm a filmmaker, and I'm on YouTube, and just check out Independent Runnings.
And do check out their podcast, which he does predominantly with a co-host called Keith Isles. But yeah, you just talk about directors. You're going through the A to Z of directors.
We are indeed, yes. Yeah. So we're up to H with Hitchcock.
Yeah. And join me next week with either Ben or Sean or Chris or a combination of all of them or some of them for something else. And I'll speak to you then.